Welcome to the Fund the People podcast. I'm your host, Rusty Stahl. We all know that philanthropy and nonprofits do an extraordinary amount of good, but we also know that our system isn't working as well as it should. We all know that people drive change, but too many nonprofit people feel less like drivers and more like roadkill. Since the year 2000, I've worked in organized philanthropy and nonprofits where I've focused on leadership and professional development. I've studied the lack of investment in our nonprofit leaders and workers, and how our systems of grant making, fundraising, governance, and management reinforce the lack of support or can transform it. When we invest in our people, we can create a more equitable and effective sector, fueled by rising levels of performance, impact, and sustainability. To bring that vision to life, in 2014, I helped to launch Fund the People, the national campaign to maximize investment in America's nonprofit workforce. Our podcast shares critical ideas, stories, and conversations about how organizations and their funders are strengthening their work by investing in the people who do the work. So buckle up, start your engines, and let's get driving. Welcome to the show, everyone. I am pleased to be joined today by Linda Nguyen. She's founder and principal of Movement Talent. And welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you, Rusty. So good to see you. So good to be here today.
Linda is founder and principal of Movement Talent and has worked for the past 20 years in civic engagement, democracy. What a concept, democracy, organizational change, and talent strategy. And Movement Talent, which is her organization, was launched in 2020 to introduce a new way of finding, supporting, and maximizing the talent for our movements in the United States. She spent 5 years at Community Change, which used to be called the Center for Community Change, leading staff recruitment and development efforts, paving the way for other social justice organizations to develop dedicated roles in talent. Prior to that, Linda served as Director of Civic Engagement for the Alliance for Children and Families, where she built and managed a 10-year national initiative to infuse activism and advocacy into the work of social service organizations, which is a whole interesting topic in and of itself. She's served on a number of boards, including the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, Keystone Accountability, and the YWCA. She's originally from Oakland and earned a BA in social welfare from UC Berkeley and a master's from the University of Michigan in public policy. So, Linda, thank you for your service, and thanks for being here. What I often invite folks to do is give us some sense of your career journey, your leadership journey, how you got to where you are now.
I think I'll start in college. I volunteered and then worked for the YWCA at UC Berkeley, which is, I think, now called the YWCA of Berkeley in Oakland. And the executive director at the time was Sharon Bettinelli. She was just one of those leaders who assumes you can do it and then lets you run with it. And so that was my introduction to sort of professional life. I shadowed her at fundraising events, at board meetings, at marches, eventually at these national YWCA conventions. And the YWCA at the time was going through a lot of change. It was the late 90s, early 2000s. And there was a big drive to really deepen its work, eliminating racism and empowering women. And so I got a front seat to a truly historic organization going through really fundamental shifts in its culture and its leadership, way of doing business. And I got to see that, you know, pretty early on. So really thankful for that experience. I worked a few odd jobs between college and graduate school. Then I went to graduate school at the University of Michigan through the Public Policy and International Affairs Fellowship Program, studied public policy, moved to Washington, D.C. afterward. And then I found a really cool role with someone I would label lovingly as a nonprofit wise guy slash agitator named Mark Rosenman. And Rusty, you know Mark really well.
I think that's a good label for him.
Yeah. So Mark at the time had raised some money to fund an exploratory project examining the advocacy appetite of nonprofit social service organizations. So over the course of a little over a year, we examined the advocacy and civic engagement efforts of hundreds of organizations around the country. We convened regional and national social service organizations, associations, and then we found some bright lights. This was 2004, so there was still an era where nonprofit organizations, particularly the ones with, you know, lots of restrictions due to funding, they were still pretty skittish about activating their client base. And yet many really understood that the work that they were doing, whether it was mental health counseling, violence prevention programs, or, you know, programs to get kids off of drugs, those were all really downstream interventions. I eventually went to work for one of the associations that was involved in the exploratory project. That was the Alliance for Children and Families. Now it's called the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities. And for close to 10 years, I built and ran a national initiative to really encourage and train the staff in these social service organizations, and in some cases, board members as well, to become more involved in advocacy and civic engagement. You know, some organizations were further along than others. Like in the time that I was with the Alliance, you know, some were already hiring like community organizers. And then some were newer to this work. And so they started with, you know, a voter registration table in their lobby. But it was incredible just to see the progress, even in the 10 years that I was there, and just to see that we were able to move the needle a little bit and help these organizations think differently about the role they can play in the democratic process. So I was nearing my 10-year mark with the Alliance, and I began to think about, you know, what's next, long time. And, you know, the last few years at the Alliance, I was beginning to more specifically focus on leadership development of people in the network and really like finding and scouting who those people were, right? Because they could be the catalyst in these organizations to help move the organization. And it just made me wonder if I should more formally look for and explore roles in recruiting, in leadership development. And this is where Melissa comes in.
We have a mutual friend in Melissa Johnson Hewitt. I know that.
Yeah. So, you know, I was talking with her about it one day, and she told me at the time that there was a director of talent acquisition and development role open at Community Change. And I looked into it and it was really intriguing, but I also didn't have any formal background. So I worked my network, applied, and, you know, somehow they took a risk on me. And I served as the director of talent acquisition and development at the organization for almost 6 years. 5.5 years. I learned a ton at Community Change, managing hiring processes for all types of roles and teams, working with managers on their management skills, and then just having a ton of exposure to the operations and sustainability functions of the organization. And I was also afforded a lot of opportunities, like being able to be a part of Rockwood Leadership Institute's Cross Movement year-long program, where I then also began to see what more could be done in the talent function, not just for individual organizations, but cross movement. So during my vision stand at Rockwood, and for those of you who don't, you know, aren't familiar with what the vision stand is, it's basically 2 or 3 minutes really of saying your piece and confessing. I think it really is like confessing what's in your heart about what you want to leave this world. And I talked about figuring out a way to approach talent for progressive causes that was more collaborative, more equitable, more respectful of potential candidates, something that was less transactional and less focused on only a few superstars, also less siloed within specific causes and between specific causes, more holistic and more efficient. And so I sat on, you know, the ideas I talked about for a couple of years, thought through how it could actually work. And in 2019, really began actively furthering the idea with a lot of support and advice from colleagues. And then I launched it as of last year, 2020.
Thank you for the giving us the arc of your career since college in such a cogent way. And it's great. I'm glad you shared the vision stand as well. That's I also did a vision stand, and my vision stand that time around helped me to move with creating Fund the People, actually. So
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a very powerful, especially if you're at these transition points in your life and your career, actually saying it out loud in front of a group. I think they make you do it twice, right?
Yeah. And then that you had critique from your cohort, which was really helpful. And then, you know, you just have like a built-in system of accountability, right? Because all those people in that room are going to remind you what you said.
So I definitely want you to tell us then, in 2020, you launched Movement Talent. Tell us what it is. Give us the overview.
Yeah. Movement Talent is designed as part resource shop, part talent agency for progressive movement folks. So for organizations, really helping them find great staff or board members, supporting their internal talent management. And then for people or candidates, supporting their career exploration, introducing them to organizations they might, you know, not have any connection with. There's also a membrane, I think is the best way to say this, surrounding all of this, which serves to help organizations help one another in the movement space. So for instance, if one organization is doing something really well, maybe it's they do a great implicit bias training for their staff interviewers, or they've developed anti-racist personnel policies, or maybe they met someone in a recruitment process who was a runner-up, but a really stellar candidate. We promote that cross-learning and sharing amongst organizations with the belief that we can all fortify together.
Can you give us a sense of what's the difference between Movement Talent and a traditional search firm?
So I can't speak for how search firms operate, their structures, et cetera. What I can tell you about Movement Talent is, one, it runs through the generous investments of a number of organizations, some who are not direct clients, you know, in the way we use the term.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we don't just handle executive level searches. We do that, but we also support organizations with mid-career roles and also a few key early career ones as well. Three, there's a ton we're doing right now that isn't search, including supporting organizations' talent planning, position development, some employer branding and marketing work, revamping, recreating recruitment processes, hiring processes, bolstering organizations' talent capacity side by side with the people who are managing those systems internally is core to how we operate. And then on the candidate side, I think serving as an agent of sorts to help individuals find the right roles. We help candidates get connected to good coaches. And we focus primarily on people of color, women of color, candidates, many at mid-career. You know, Movement Talent is accountable to the movement. It's accountable to social, racial, gender, economic, environmental justice. It's not accountable to profit margins.
How does that accountability work? Is it how you lead? Is it something financial? What is it, the board? Is there a board? Or
there are a couple advisors right now. They're actually both from my Rockwood cohort. The effort is right now fiscally sponsored by Community Change. So okay. I get a lot of support and backup from Community Change. And my, you know, my former bosses there who are incredible and very supportive of this. I think it shows up. I think the accountability shows up in that the way we work with organizations and the way we work with candidates is not transactional. It's relationship building over the long term, and it's meeting organizations where they are. I think sometimes we assume that organizations outsource things the way they outsource things because they really lack like the expertise and knowledge. But I think also sometimes those systems are set up that way, so they don't really have a choice. It's either like the whole kit and caboodle or like nothing. And I think there's a lot in between that external support could really help move. Well, you know, I think there's also a choice in the types of organizations that we work with, right? And I think that is a little bit of a difference. And so, you know, I think there really is a focus on movement building organizations that are squarely in the spaces of progressive change.
So it seems to me like your one unique thing you've got going on, different from a search firm, is you're addressing both sort of supply and demand sides, right? You're both the career seekers, job seekers, folk, individuals out there who want to contribute through their time and skill and energy, and then the organizations and movements that need talent, need staff, need people power. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about how each side, how you engage with and support, and like how people engage with you from each of those sides. So let's start with the individual side, because search firms, their client is the organization, and that, you know, their product is kind of the eventual candidate. And so I'm out there mid-career or early career. You've said you work primarily or are looking to work with people of color, women of color. Can you give us a little bit of the flow of how someone might find you and what you do with them?
Up until this point, a lot of it has been word of mouth. I was just speaking at a training program for some progressive emerging leaders in Missouri. And, you know, so they might be introduced to me there. And then they might say afterward, hey, I really want to talk to you about my career. And then we'll do something called a talent talk, where we'll sit down and talk a little bit about their goals and aspirations, you know, what they've done up until this point, where they feel like they might have some deficiencies and need some more training or development. We then, you know, kind of put together a plan for how they might seek some of that additional support or training, also a list of organizations and people that they should do some research on if they're interested in a specific field or area or cause. I think also give them really honest and critical feedback at the beginning. I think sometimes we go through some of these processes, Rusty, and people don't hear anything till the very end, right? Sort of like, oh, well, you're lacking management experience, or, you know, we didn't like the way you answered this one question like two rounds ago, right? And it'd be great if people can have a little bit of that insight from the start, right? And so I think having an eye for picking out things that people want to do versus where they really are, and giving them kind feedback, honest feedback, can really help someone in their career exploration. Sometimes we connect them with coaches who, you know, can have, you know, more targeted conversations about where they want to be going, and, you know, over the course of a year can really like dig into where this person wants to be going, especially if they're at that sort of pivot point in their career. Maybe they've been doing something for a really long time and they know they want to pivot, but not sure exactly what. I work with a number of really great coaches that, you know, I know their specialties, and so I kind of can do a little bit of matchmaking there as well, which is really terrific.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge asset to bring to those individuals you're working with. It sounds like you do some important coaching and sort of this feedback opportunity at the beginning, even if you don't connect them to sort of formal coaching.
Absolutely. Some candidates I'll meet through different hiring processes. And so I can actually give them some feedback, you know, in how they did on an interview, or even ask them, because sometimes they actually already know, they just need to be asked, what do you think you could have done better in that interview? How could you have phrased that differently? How could you have prepared better?
All right, now let's turn to the organizational side.
So on the organization side, I think there's a few things that we've really been able to provide. One is, you know, working side by side with the folks who are doing the talent work in the organization. So it's, you know, the hiring, staff development, talent planning work, working with them side by side and supporting their efforts. And so, you know, I'm working with one organization right now where the current executive director is developing a co-executive director role, right? And so going through all the stages of like figuring out like role definition and capacity, and then how those positions are going to relate to other positions in the organization, how those positions are going to be framed to the public, outlining, you know, an early recruitment strategy, thinking about what onboarding and integration that person is going to require when they come to the organization. So, you know, it can be any range of things. You know, we just need extra help and hands with this volume of people we have to screen, right? Our hiring manager doesn't have time for 15 screens this week. So can we like divvy up the work a little bit? So I've been working really closely, you know, side by side with organizations in those processes. And it's been phenomenal. I've just learned so much. And there are very talented people in these organizations running this work.
It sounds like you're really flexible and kind of responsive to what's going on in an organization, what they need. And so you're just like, you know, there to partner on what they need it.
And then, you know, where I don't have the answers, because I don't have a lot of the answers, I connect them with like people in other organizations. So there is this other sort of purposeful networking aspect that I think, you know, speaks to more of the ecosystem model.
One thing I see on your website, you have the Common Application, which I thought you might talk about as part of on the individual side, but can you tell folks about the Common Application? What is it, and how should people use it?
I'll tell you, Rusty, what it was designed for. I mean, the thought was somebody could express interest in a whole set of organizations at once, and then we would have a talent talk and I can give them an assessment around whether they could or should actively apply for any open roles at any of these organizations. I think like a true common application only works when the backend system is all shared, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not at a point where that is the case right now. And, you know, I want to focus on like who we're talking to through the common application at this stage more than kind of the backend functionality.
But so if I'm a person looking for a new job or to break into the social justice world as a career, if I fill out that application, it's a way to reach you to have this talent talk and like start feeling out what I'm bringing to the table, where I need to work, what's out there possibly, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, at any one time, we're actively working with, you know, 20 different organizations, but also have our eyes and ears open to so many other roles as well and organizations. And so you could get some really good suggestions pretty quickly.
All right. What's the need for this that you're trying to meet? Like, what do you see? What have you seen over the 5+ years you've been working on talent issues in the movement?
I think one, and we hear this all the time, and obviously you've done so much work on this, Rusty, is, you know, really the pipeline issues. And, you know, particularly for organizations who are organizing in communities, who are building base, who are working with individuals with a leadership development lens, creating long-term relationships. The skills it takes to do that work, they're not always apparent right away, especially in some of these like interview processes and selection processes. And so for those frontline organizing roles, it does often take more time to find the right person. We aren't in this moment churning out community organizers at the same rate as, say, you know, engineers or teachers. So it does take a little, you know, more time sometimes. I think it's getting there though. I think there's a lot more interest in this type of work than in the past. And yeah, I'm excited to see where, you know, people are headed. I talk to a lot of candidates who want to switch sectors because of everything that they've experienced and seen, you know, in 2020 and this year so far. And I think people are deeply moved by, you know, what is going on in the world and all the conversations about race and equity and, you know, creating a more just future for people.
Yeah, it does feel like there is so much change going on in our society. It's kind of incredible. And people have become, many people have become politicized and mobilized, and so how to harness that energy and keep people engaged.
We also lack management training, I think, in this space. So oftentimes I think this comes from the campaign world, actually, where, you know, we're thrust into situations where we need to manage sometimes tons of people and money and quickly. And that doesn't always translate well into all settings and organizations. So I think we deal with a fair amount of unwanted turnover in our organizations due to, you know, less than stellar management. And then I think one more like issue or need that I would bring up is, I think organizations in the social justice movement building space can be really tunnel focused on storytelling at the community level, talking about issues and people and, you know, the core of their mission and work, which is laudable. But then we also forget to talk about ourselves. And in the context of talent, talk about ourselves as employers. Like, why would someone want to work here? You know, what's it like to work here? What are the benefits that you might get here that you might not get anywhere else?
Yeah, and social justice leaders and managers, I think, often feel uncomfortable as managers and employers. There's a culture, I feel like, of, you know, we're on the outside and we're in, on the side of labor, and management is sort of framed as, you know, the bad guy sometimes, or at least the people we need to negotiate with for more rights or benefits or pay.
I think that's a really important point, Rusty. You know, I think about even the evolution of formal talent roles in, you know, social justice organizations and movement building organizations. You know, the idea, I think, really came from the corporate sector, right? Trying to pull out the strategic parts of human resources and less about sort of the day-to-day personnel management and administration, but really around, you know, long-term staff and talent planning for organizations based on goals. And there's lots of metrics that go along with that, right? And they're very driven typically by profit incentives. And so you have things like, you know, time to fill a position and, you know, days it's been posted and things like that. And I think, you know, one of the things we have to think about, whether it's about like becoming a manager or, you know, taking on a role that maybe had roots in corporations, is to think about how do we adapt to, you know, our value system and our operating principles, and how do we work within the confines of like a role to be able to deliver on the work.
Yeah, some things translate easily between sectors, and some things just are not applicable. So I mean, we've already kind of covered the weaknesses and at least, but what do you see as some of the strengths of social justice groups in terms of, you know, how they're investing, you know, whether it's time, money, or policies and systems, how they're investing in their in their staff and employees?
I see a lot of passion and creativity amongst the people who are managing the talent functions in the organization. I think the hard part is that's not all that they do. Right. And so I think really being able to devote the time and energy into prospecting and hiring and talent development, you know, it's really laborious, right? Anybody who's done this work knows it's laborious. It's highly personal. It requires discretion. And I think it can be taxing in a way where people just then, you know, choose to do the other things that they have on their plate. And so that's something I would say about, it's not a weakness, but just more a feature of how we're organized.
Right. I know when I've had to, when I've had the opportunity to create staff positions and hire for them, it is kind of an overwhelming proposition. Like, oh, and then if you have 100 applicants or something, it's like, how do you treat all those people well and figure out? It's a lot of work, like you said. It means other work has to be paused, especially if you want to treat people well, your candidates well, even if they aren't being hired.
Yeah, that's something I've been zeroing in on more as, you know, organizations approach movement talent is sometimes they need targeted support for a position. And, you know, one thing I'm starting to really say is, like, we need those back-end systems running well enough that, like, I have some confidence that the candidate's experience is going to be a decent one. It feels like if it's not set up that way, then we need to go set it up before we do a targeted search, because in the end, it just, like, comes back to the organization, really reflects poorly on that organization. Then candidates can leave with a bad taste in their mouth.
Right. It occurs to me that organizational culture is both at the crux of how these things play out and also is impacted by them, because the people you do or do not bring in then impact your organizational culture.
Yes, absolutely. I'll say a couple of things. One, we aren't as unique as we think we are. So that's like one thing. I think there are some overarching values and attributes that we really hold dear, all of us. And then, but I will say that, you know, there are some unique attributes about each organizational culture, and being able to get under that and figuring out what those are and being able to communicate that with candidates is to everyone's benefit, right? It's a two-way process, right? Candidate selection. The person is vetting the organization just as much as the organization is vetting the person.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so it's a good thing you're working with both groups. We've been focused on the organizations and the individuals, but there's an interesting difference between investing in people systems inside an organization and then creating or investing in people systems in the ecosystem in which a bunch of organizations, movements, and people are all operating. So I wanted to get your thoughts on sort of the pros and cons and what it means to create like an infrastructure like you're building, or a, what I would call like a people system in an ecosystem versus kind of just internally in the four walls of one institution.
So I think the pros of investing in a people system internally is, you know, you have dedicated staff that your staff can go to, who can hopefully support people well on their career paths, attract good people to come work for them in the first place. I'm actually not sure if there are any cons to investing within the organization's four walls, except if the organization isn't clear on their talent priorities, and then, you know, that person or that department is underutilized. I think the pros of investing in people systems externally in the ecosystem that organizations operate in, which is Movement Talent's proposition, is the recognition that one organization's success often bolsters all of us. So helping people reach or discover their highest calling or utility at any given moment, it benefits all of us, right? All of our causes, everything that we're working for. We sit at many of the same tables trying to move policy, trying to move legislation, trying to move money, trying to move people. And the well-being, or the ikigai, which is the Japanese word for reason for being or purpose, the ikigai and well-being of any one person around that table matters.
All for one, one for all. We often just get into that headspace of kind of organizational ego and organizational sustainability that can be harmful to the greater good of our partners and allies and in a movement or an ecosystem. So I think that's a good reminder that the success of one organization or one person in that ecosystem can bolster everybody. I see often, you know, funders or executive directors will say, well, if we invest in this person and then they leave because now they're more skilled or more known, then that investment, you know, was wasted. And I've tried to argue, no, that investment was a success. That person is likely going to go do something even more amazing somewhere else, and that's going to benefit their employer because they're going to speak well of that employer, and people will see, oh, you work there, then you can be invested in and move to greater opportunities elsewhere. So like there's huge benefits to that, but only if you take that wider view.
Agree with you 100%.
So what would your message be for, you know, the social justice funders and social justice organizations out there?
You know, Rusty, I don't know if I have, you know, a message for funders at this point in the way that I think that you think that I would have a message. I'm experimenting with a lot right now, figuring out how best to support people with their career exploration in the movement. You know, sometimes it's finding them the right coach. I'm thinking about ways to help subsidize that so that it's not prohibitive to people. And then for the organizations that Movement Talent works with, figuring out which organizations to spend the most time with to create the greatest amount of impact. Is it helping organizations find their director of people or director of talent, which we are doing? Is it the startup organizations, which mm-hmm. we're also doing? Mm-hmm. Is it the state and local power building groups, which is also an area that we're in? Is it racial justice work? Is it climate? Is it the organizations and spaces where all the causes purposefully intersect? So, you know, I don't have any like lofty proclamations for funders today. You know, you've known me for a long time, Rusty. And, you know, people who know me know I'm much more interested in trying and doing and less about talking about what we should be doing.
Well, we need doers, that's for sure. So I'm kind of in awe of you for creating this thing during such a tumultuous year as last year, and pursuing that vision that you first articulated in your vision stand. It takes a ton of fortitude and time and skill and love to build something, you know, as you continue to experiment and try different things. That's just a joyful place to be, right? I'm excited to continue to watch as you build and grow what you're doing. I want to invite you just to share where folks can reach you on the web and find out more about Movement Talent.
So Movement Talent's website is movementtalent.org. We have, you know, some career stories on the site. We have a YouTube channel that also shows those same career stories. So check those out. We have an opportunity board, which is updated weekly and is very curated. So you're never going to see, you know, 5,000 jobs. From time to time, we also do career fairs on Clubhouse. On Twitter, my personal handle is Linda Nguyen 100, the number, and then Movement Talents is Movement Talent.
All right. Well, that's very straightforward. 100%. Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you so much, Rusty. It's been such a pleasure, as always. And thank you for all you're doing to bolster this work and get the messages out.
Oh, thank you, Linda. I appreciate that. And thank you for everything you're doing. And thanks for being here today to tell folks about Movement Talent.
Thanks for listening to Fund the People, a podcast with me, Rusty Stahl, where we amplify how and why philanthropy should support the nonprofit workforce. For links to the resources that were mentioned in this episode, check out our show notes and more at fundthepeople.org/podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show. And if you enjoyed the episode or you're a regular listener, please share the podcast with your network or at least with one or two colleagues who you believe would find it valuable. Thanks for all you do every day for our community and our country through your nonprofit work. Stick with it, keep your tank full, and take care of one another.